from America's frontier, Nebraska. It's the Outdoor Connection with Rick Windham on News Talk 1240 KODY.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Outdoor Connection. My guest this morning is a friend of the show, Daryl Bauer. How are you doing today, sir?
Good, Rick. How are you guys doing?
You staying cool?
Well, yeah, that's about what a guy has to do right now.
This is about the time I start thinking about, you know, dragging out my scuba gear and going spearfishing because I can be under the water.
that's what sounds good is playing in the water during the day and maybe keeping the fish into evenings and mornings.
Yeah. Yep, that sounds like a plan. First thing I wanted to talk about this morning is we've had kind of a run of some new state record fish, and I wanted to mention those.
June, we were joking that every week in June it was another state record that was coming in for about 3 weeks in a row. So, yeah, and they were big fish, too.
Right. Let's talk about the blue cat first. That was taken down near Brownville. What did that
actually,
one weigh?
Flathead cat.
Oh, it was a flathead. Okay.
Yes, and but you're right. I would have been less surprised by the blue cat because I see pictures of some huge blue cats coming from the Missouri River every year, some of which I suspect might be big enough to be new state records if they'd weigh them in. But this was a flathead cat, and I was a bit surprised because our hook and line record for flathead cats was 80 pounds, which is a really big flathead.
Right.
And this guy beat that record by 9 pounds. So
wow.
That's a ginormous flathead catfish, 89 pounds. Richard Hagen caught it from the Missouri River down in southeast corner of Nebraska.
And I understand that he took the fish and he tried to find some place, like an aquarium that would take it, was unable to do that, and the fish ultimately got returned back to the river.
He kept it alive. He had a tank that he hauled it around in. And yeah, the problem is who's got even an aquarium, you know, that's a big fish. So he couldn't find anybody that really had room for it. Well, that's a big predator fish.
I figured you'd have a coffee table, you know, with glass sides that you could put him on and watch him. And
yeah. I think I should have one of them walk-through aquariums as my office, and then I could put something like that in it. That would be really cool.
I agree.
Yeah. So, yeah, that fish is back in the river, so theoretically it's getting even bigger, and who knows, you know, maybe it'll be caught again.
Very true. And flatheads are one of my favorites. I love flying for flatheads out here in Sutherland Reservoir and the canals in particular. But
yep.
Years ago, I caught a flathead just downstream from where the tail race from the hydro comes back into the South Platte, and you go
sure,
downstream
I know
a little
where
bit.
You're talking.
You downstream a little bit, there's some old, you know, the old way of bank stabilization was throw a car body there.
Yeah.
And I caught one there, and I was amazed because I knew flatheads were big river fish traditionally, and I was trying to figure out how it got there, and then I was talking to Monty Madsen, and Monty said, yeah, he said, they used to raise flathead there here in North Platte. Well, still do. And that was one that just probably got dumped in the canal at the end of the year when they were done raising fish.
Yeah.
I thought I had something really rare, but
well, they aren't caught very often because the usual stink bait approach does not work for flatheads.
No, they're predators.
They are predators. They're every bit as much predator as a muskie. So you have to keep that in mind if you want to catch flatheads.
I was out fishing for flathead one time and had some other guys show up. They were talking. And he said, what are you using for bait? And I was baiting up 2 and 3 pound carp for my bait.
Well, and if you want to catch an 89 pound flathead, that's honestly what they're eating.
That's exactly right.
That is not too big for bait.
I've always been a believer in, you know, big bait for big fish.
Yeah, me too.
And they are fantastic fighters.
Oh, yeah. Yep. They're just neat fish.
I hooked into one at Sutherland one time in the cooling pond, and it made a big figure eight out in front of me and then decided which way west was and took off. And the guy fishing with me is looking at me. He says, "Are you going to turn that fish?" I said, "No, I don't think so." And it took 160 yards of line and broke it at the spool. And I got home.
It's still heading west.
Still headed west. I got home and I sent a note off to Mark Sexton up at Berkeley, told him what happened, and I said, 40 pound fire line just ain't getting it. What else do you have? And the next morning I had a note that says, you know, the biggest thing we make is 80 pounds, it's on the way, and where are you taking me fishing the next time?
Yeah.
But they're fun to catch. Another fish, I think, I read that is a new state record is we have another hybrid wiper that was a state record.
That was the next week in June, and the flathead, my phone started ringing on a Sunday evening. The next week, I didn't get any phone calls, but first thing on Monday, I got in the office and opened up my emails, and I had an email about a new state record wiper from out there at McConaughey. So that was 21 pounds, 9 ounces, caught on a swim bait. A gentleman from Colorado caught that. Tao Kong Yang is his name. And it's an impressive fish. It was 36 inches long.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now the real question is, how long is it going to be before Steve Lytle breaks the record again?
I've had the same thought. I haven't talked to Steve this summer, but I don't know if he's frantically at it trying to beat that state record again.
He's had it several times.
Yeah, he has. And I would tell you this, if that's going to be beaten again, my guess is it would be McConaughey. That reservoir just has the perfect conditions for producing big wipers. So if that one's going to go down again, McConaughey would be my pick.
Do you know what part of the lake he was fishing in?
I do. There were pictures on Facebook taken. It's right off the dam. There's pictures he took right after he caught the fish. And you can see he's fishing on the dam.
Oh,
so
man.
That's no, you know, how us fishermen are. I'm afraid that's not a secret.
No. And was he fishing from the bank then, too?
Yes, he was.
Well,
absolutely.
See, anybody can go do that then.
That's exactly right. I mean, you know how that is. You got to walk a ways and crawl over some rocks. But, yeah.
Well, nice, cool evening. I might be out there doing that again.
That's right.
And then I think the last one was the Big Head Carp.
Big Head Carp was the next week. And by that third week, we were joking, should be another state record. And sure enough, I get a call from our Exarban Aquarium and a gentleman, this time with a bow and arrow, bow fishing, had found an 81-pound, almost 82 pounds, 81 pounds, 14 ounces, big head carp in a private pit in Dodge County. And again, the pictures are impressive. This is a big fish.
I've seen a couple of those.
It looks as big as the guy holding it. So Richard Porter shot that fish, and Richard's one of our very avid bowfishers in the state, and in fact he's done a lot to promote the sport and introduce kids to it. So this guy's a hardcore, he knows what he's doing, and he's got the state record for bowfishing a big head carp now.
I hear the music in the background, meaning Tristan's telling me it's time for a commercial break. But when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about the bow fishing aspect with the big head carp and just in general. So,
you bet.
Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back after these messages.
Portland, Oregon has been the scene of violent protests for almost two straight months. This week, an anti-capitalist group calling themselves the Pacific Youth Liberation Front set up a so-called autonomous zone like the leftist crazies in Seattle did a few weeks ago. Now, nobody with any sense wants to risk their lives to go downtown. Businesses in Portland have suffered over $23 million in damages and counting. These vicious, violent, hate-filled anti-American protesters are also attacking federal buildings. Now, to protect this federal property, the Department of Homeland Security deployed federal agents to Portland. That has caused the mayor of Portland, Ted Wheeler, to go ballistic. Mayor Wheeler is blaming the federal agents for bringing violence to Portland streets. Well, all they've done is defend themselves when attacked by these worthless shreds of human debris anarchists. Mayor Wheeler is demanding that federal agents either stay inside their federal buildings or get the hell out of town. Now, this nutjob mayor also ordered the federal agents to clean the graffiti off of these buildings, graffiti that was put there by the violent anti-American, anti-capitalist rioters that Wheeler has allowed to control his city. Mayor Wheeler in Portland, like Mayor de Blasio in New York, is an abject idiot. It is amazing there are any businesses at all left in either city. And for how long will there be?
Here's your forecast on News Talk 1240 AM and 106.1 FM. A heat advisory goes in effect this afternoon. Sunny and hot for today. Highs will make it into the upper 90s to near 100, with heat index values getting to or above 105. Wind south-southeasterly 5 to 10 miles per hour. And then mostly clear tonight and lows drop to 67. Weather is brought to you by North Platte Airport with daily jet service to Denver and beyond. Book at united.com.
Welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Daryl Bauer this morning with the Nebraska Game and Parks Commission. When we left there, Daryl, we were talking about the gentleman, Mr. Porter, that got the new big head carp. And when you said his name, my first thought was, is he any relation to Larry Porter?
I couldn't tell you. I don't know. But, yeah, that is a familiar name in Nebraska outdoors.
Right. I've known Larry for many, many years, and
yep.
He's retired now as a writer for the World Herald, but he's still plugging.
Yep.
So, kind of like Turpin.
Yeah, very much.
Yep.
And very much treasures those guys are. They are.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, the bow hunting aspect, or bow fishing aspect for all species, it's a unique way of doing it, but just a lot of fun.
Absolutely, and you talk about something to do on a hot afternoon. You can grab the bow and go splash around in the river or something and have a blast, shooting carp and staying cool.
That's true. I probably use my bow more for bow fishing than I do for hunting anything else.
Sure.
Just for that reason, it's
well,
it's fun.
And a great way to stay, fine-tuned with those bow shooting skills. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, if you can hit fish, you can hit most anything. And then you got to take in the refraction phenomenon and all that.
Exactly. Yeah. You got to shoot a lot lower than what you think with the refraction of the light in the water, yes.
Years ago when we had our outdoor expos out here, I got in a couple guys that from around the St. Louis area, and they brought in their mount. They had a new world's record alligator guard taken by bow.
Oh.
And they were one
huge.
Of the... it was 9-something feet long and...
Yeah.
There's a picture I've got somewhere in my files. One of the guys that was there at the show, he had his son with him who was maybe a year old, and he was holding this kid up inside the mouth of this gar.
Yeah, I can believe that.
Just huge. But they had a company, and they did some YouTube videos, and their name was Aim Low Productions. And if you understand bow fishing, you do exactly what that
means.
That's
exactly right. Yeah, that's good.
just in general, we got a few minutes left, but summer fishing, of course, with the heat presents challenges for the angler, but it also impacts the fish a little bit. Where and how do you fish in this type of weather?
Well, I go into the speech about summer fishing gets tough, you know, not because the water's warm or the fish are uncomfortable. You know, they're what we call cold-blooded, which really means they're the same temperature as their environment. So during the summer when the water's warm, their metabolism's actually cooking right along, and they have to eat. In fact, they eat as much or more during the summer as they do any other time of year. The reason the fishing gets tough is because there's more natural prey available this time of year than any other time of year. So, you know, like on our reservoirs where we have shad, there's literally millions of those young of the year shad, and about all a fish has to do is open its mouth and it's got a meal. So that's why the fishing gets tough during the summer. So knowing that, then the key things to keep in mind is the feeding periods are short. They can be very intense, but they can be short. So you need to be, you know, fishing those prime times. I already mentioned early, late in the day tends to be good times, where you may pick up, you know, 20, 30 minutes of feeding activity, and then it may be tough for the rest of the day.
How much stock do you put in, like, those Solunar programs that tell you what the peak feeding times are?
Yeah, you know, I'll always tell you the best time to go fishing is whenever you have time. So
there you go.
don't sit around and wait for the perfect time. But I'll also tell you, If we lived on the coast and you were fishing in marine waters, you would be very aware of the tides.
Exactly.
And those are related to those Solunar tables. So you don't see any obvious, you know, things like tides on our inland waters, but there could be some, you know, movements of even aquatic insects and then bait fish that could be affected by those tables. And if you talk to some guys, they'll swear by them. So I'm not planning my fishing trips by those, but, you know, if I know there's going to be a major period or something, I may stay and fish another hour.
Exactly. Another topic, you know, wide-ranging group of topics today, but we've had a couple instances where they've had some algae blooms, and this is the time of the year for it.
Yep.
Are there any of the lakes now that are still under health alert?
The Nebraska Department of Environment and Energy does the weekly testing.
Right.
And I just got their results again last night. So, yeah, there were like three lakes that are going to be on the list for this week. I'd have to pull up the list. I don't remember what three
they're all
they
down
were.
All down in the southeast part of the
yeah,
state.
Yeah, right? Like one was Kirkman's Cove, one was Maple Creek, and I can't remember what the third one was. But anyhow,
Branch Oak was in there, or not?
What's
Branch
that,
Oak.
Rick?
Was it Rockford Lake that was in there too?
Might have been. I think that might have been the third one.
Okay.
And, you know, that blue-green algae, you know, I tell people it's everywhere. It's literally been around since the beginning of time.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is under certain conditions, some species will bloom and become very abundant, and that's during the hottest weather of the summers when that happens. And then some of those species produce toxins that are toxic to, you know, mammals like us or especially our pets.
There was just a story this week, which I found unique in the fact that it was moving water. It was actually a stream in Zion National Park. Did you see that one?
No, I didn't.
A family was there, and they had like a 10-month-old husky.
Yeah.
And it got in the water playing. It drank some water, and they said literally within minutes started acting like it was in some type of distress, and
right.
Within a half hour, it died.
That's unfortunate.
It is, but the fact that
usually,
it was... Go ahead.
Running water, usually it doesn't accumulate.
Right.
You know, where you see the big blooms is like on a lake where the wind's been blowing in for a couple days. Then it really accumulates in those areas. And those are the areas you really want to avoid.
Right. But this is the time of year for it. We got the hot
yep.
weather. You get a little rain with some runoff, and you get a lot of nutrients in the water, and you got the chemistry is ready to go.
Exactly. You're exactly right. I tell people, you know, don't be paranoid about it, but be aware of it. Certainly be aware of the testing that DEE does. But then also know that if you see water that looks like, you know, pea green soup, or literally looks like somebody spilled a can of John Deere green paint on the water, that is probably one of those blooms, and you probably don't want to be swimming in it, and you probably want to keep your pets out of it.
Right. Interstate lakes. I know that's one another one of your kind of favorite subjects.
Love them, yep.
I think right now for our area out here, that's one of the best places to go fishing because you have a lot to choose from and you got some shade.
Yep. And that's the beauty of them is if you're not catching fish on one of them, you know, 5-10 miles down the road, there's another one. Go give it a try.
We've actually set up a couple fishing trips, my core group of buddies, and we'll take, you know, our boats and campers and whatever else, and we'll start somewhere east. We'll go maybe like as far as Grand Island and then start fishing the lakes back.
Yeah.
And we pull off, we stop. You know, if we catch fish, we'll stay. You know, if it's good enough, we may camp overnight. If not, like you said, move 10 miles, go to the next one.
Sounds like a great plan.
We call it our I-80 fishing safari.
Yep.
And it's just a smorgasbord of fish that are in there.
Well, you know, largemouth bass, bluegills, and some channel catfish are consistent on a lot of them, but then there's a variety of other species you'll catch, too. So, yeah, there's some good fishing on those lakes.
And they're made for kayaks.
Yes.
It
small
is.
Boats,
uh-huh.
Float tubes are perfect.
Yep. You generally don't have much in the way of huge waves made up by wind. None of them that I know of has any feeder creeks or anything coming into them. They're all pits, so you don't have, you know, debris or cloudiness in the water making
right.
that a problem. They're all pretty pristine lakes.
Yeah, water quality is generally really good on those, and then quite a bit of aquatic vegetation grows in them, too, and that's where those fish are at.
Oh, yeah. They love hiding in the weeds.
Yep.
That's where slip bobber come in really well.
Slip bobber's a good thing to use, you bet. Don't forget the topwater baits this time of year, too.
Oh, that's right. I use some long stick baits, you know, the ones
yep.
with the props at each end.
Yep.
And that's a good one for bass and some northern pike, too, I catch with those.
Like I said, probably early, late in the day doing that, but absolutely
right.
you can have a blast catching fish on those interstate lakes, throwing some topwaters this time of year.
Another one of my favorite species, and I know you've been after them many times, is smallmouth bass.
Yep.
And the canals right now, this is the kind of year for smallmouth bass, or time
of
year.
Oh, yeah. In that moving water, if you want to fish the heat of the day, you can go down and still catch some of those smallmouth even during the middle of the day.
We've got an issue right now where they've been running some heavy flows down the North Platte to do some checking that the federal U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service wanted to do, so the canals are running kind of high, but you
right.
can still catch them.
Yeah. In fact, that high water probably tends to push them even, you know, up on the bank even further, tighter to that rocky habitat. So, yeah, they're there.
That's always fun, getting my jigging poles out there and go fish for them. I introduced a couple more people to that technique, and they're, you know, no pun intended, but they're hooked.
Right. Well, yeah, the smallmouth are just fun to catch.
They are. They are. They are just a voracious species, and you put a half-pound to one-pound smallmouth on the end of one of those real limber rods, and you think you got a whale out there for a while.
Right.
So what else are we going to cover? We got a couple minutes left. You got any news for us?
Oh, boy, I'm trying to think. Of course, we're still continuing projects with the Aquatic Habitat Program. Big ones, and this is a little bit west of where you guys are at, but one of the big ones we finished up this year is out on Fort Robinson. Some of the ponds there, we've done some access improvements. Be a lot more bank fishing friendly there. And, of course, we'll continue with some stream work through that program now, too, that we're doing. So that goes on. You know, we've been restricted with some of the things we do because of the virus this year. But fortunately, a lot of the stuff we do is in the outdoors. So even with social distancing, we can still get out and continue to get some things done.
I was up Ainsworth Bassett area here a while back and then looked at some of that work that was being done up on Long Pine Creek, and
yes,
that is very nice. They weren't finished yet. They still had some of the big equipment in, but
right,
I'm going to be going up there and trying that one out.
Yeah, up on the Pine Glen area specifically, yeah, we've done a lot of work there, which will be some excellent trout fishing.
Very good. We're out of time again, sir.
Hey, we can fill a half hour, no problem.
No problem. You have a great weekend. Maybe get a line wet yourself, and we'll talk to you again sometime.
All right, we'll do, Rick.
That's it for this week, folks. We'll see you next time on another edition of the Outdoor Connection.
From the Bruce Furniture and Floor Covering Studios, this is KODY North Platte with translator K291BW North Platte. Bruce Furniture. We believe better furniture is for everyone. 209 East 4th.